What is up, everybody, and welcome back to Zachary Reality. It is your host, Zachary Reality, and you guys are going to be so excited to see who we have on the podcast today. We have Jason Tardick, who just wrote a new book called Talk Money to Me, The 8 Essential Financial Questions to Discuss with Your Partner. I have it right here, so we're going to get into it. We're going to get some money and life advice, and if we're lucky, we'll get some gossip out of Jason and talk a little bachelor. Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Zachary. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's always nice to catch up with you. It's been a minute, so I'm so excited to chat.
Oh my God. Always a pleasure, and you're absolutely killing it. I'm proud of you. It's fun to see what you're doing.
Thank you so much. And for people who might not know, I'm actually one of the influencers at your agency, Rewired Talent. So we are very connected, and we have been for a long time. So I really appreciate that you write books like this, and you kind of give a lot of insight to just like learning about the industry and money and the business, because as someone who hasn't learned everything from their teachers or their parents, like I feel like I can really look to you and your podcast to get a lot of insights on adulting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, like that's the thesis behind a lot of the stuff we're doing, is it's just the stuff that we weren't taught in the school system, but the stuff that we absolutely have to know. So when we try and have conversations, even if it's like pop culture and money or whatever it is, the ideas behind every dollar amount we discuss, there's a story and lesson to be learned. So that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I love it. So you wrote your first book, The Road to the Restart Roadmap. Second book, Talk Money to Me. What is the biggest difference between the first and the second? How do you kind of transition into writing the next one?
So the first book is all career navigation based. And it was like perfect timing with the pandemic, and like everyone hit restart. And I hit restart on my career. So it's much more focused on the idea of like the system will put us down a path that they think we should be on. And unless we take insane initiative, we will be led down that path. And it's oftentimes you have to break the blueprint to be where you want to be, because the system might not lead you to where you want to be. So very career navigation based. And the second book, I knew it was going to be personal finance based. It was just, what's the theme going to be? And the theme was really centered around, of course, my background is all in finance. And then I went on a love show, so love and money. But also there's just so many books out there that are self-help towards love. And there are so many books that are independently self-help towards money. There isn't a book yet that merges the two. And we know that as a country, from a macro perspective, all the statistics say we are really struggling as it relates to love, and we are really struggling as it relates to personal finance. And when you combine the two, it is a massive, massive issue within this country. So that was kind of the idea of it.
Yeah, you say the first reason couples break up is infidelity, and the second reason is finances. So I find it really interesting how you are encouraging people to talk about their finances really early on in a relationship, and even with your friends and your peers. And those conversations are so uncomfortable. Who do you find the most uncomfortable to talk about finances with? Like, who in your life or in your business do you think it's the most like awkward, but it's like the most important?
Yeah, I think one thing you said real quick, I want to make sure I touch on is financial infidelity is a very big thing, which is essentially cheating through money, manipulating, stealing, lying. And that through research, there's a ton of correlation to those who steal through money, financial infidelity and infidelity. So it's kind of wild how doing the due diligence, having these conversations and talking about it actually could help you possibly identify other areas in a relationship that are being masked. So that's one thing. But I think the answer to your question for each person will vary. Who is it that's like, think about like a target symbol when you go to Target, who's in that inner circle of the people you trust and love and will give everything to? And I always say, start there with those conversations and then work your way out. But I think who is probably like the most, the biggest challenge I have about talking money, I would say probably, I don't know, maybe my dad actually. I think my dad is like, he's very tight-lipped with this stuff. So my dad's pretty tough to talk about this stuff with.
Yeah, I don't like to tell my mom because she's too nosy. So it's just like, you got to keep that wall up. But what I love about your books is that it's very like personal to you. It's about your journey and like where you are in your life. So like the first one, it was about when you started your career, like for the first time after you left banking. And this second book starts off with you talking about your breakup and how you had to, you know, go through that transition of figuring that out and how you wish that you maybe asked more financial questions in the beginning of your relationship. So how do you kind of write about this and tie it together and get vulnerable? Like how do you able to really just like kind of let people in without revealing too much?
Yeah. You know, the truth is a funny little tidbit is that the book was already written while my ex and I were still together.
Yeah.
But it was due after when we had broken up. Mm-hmm. So we had to do some like serious on the fly adjustments because it's like, you know, the obviously the writing, the tone, all the things were different from the time of completing the writing to the time that had to go to printers. So we were scrambling in that time period. But the idea, I think, is with anything as it relates to vulnerability, especially with love, and there's a section on it, just like love shouldn't be a poker game, like you got to show your cards. What I have found is that this really tough conversation about money, whether it's people coming on my podcast, which Zachary, next time we're in the same city, I want to do my podcast. It starts with vulnerability. It starts with showing your cards first. So when I wrote these two first chapters, I was like, I need to really aggressively put it out there that I too, even though I have like all this experience in finance, MBA, lending all this money, I used to literally tell people if they're approved or denied, like I too made many mistakes. And so the ideology is like, if I'm like this finance expert and I've done 15 years in this, and at 16, my grandfather sat me down to teach me this, to learn from mistakes he made, and I still made them. And here are my mistakes that I made, no one else. You too might be making some. And so the idea is like, let's get vulnerable and connect through my authenticity, my true storytelling, so that I can also make the reader feel like they can do the same. And in the book, there's, you know, there's a lot of journaling and stuff in here and things that you can put in here. It's almost like a workbook too. So you can go through it to see where you were versus where you are.
Yeah, I love that. Cause it's like, one, you got to hook them in. But also, you know, because everyone's always interested in that kind of stuff too. But also, it's like you got to show people that like you're not perfect either. And this isn't like a rule book. You're just like talking about your experiences. And you have a lot since you did work in banking for so long. And you talk about how you lost your job and it wasn't necessarily your fault, but it was kind of like the life that you signed up for in a way when you went on the show. Talk to me about how hard that was for you. And was that why you were maybe so free to just kind of move across the country and not ask those questions because you just had the freedom for the first time?
Yeah. You know, I think the reality of the situation was I wanted to get out of that job eventually. But when I signed the deal to go to Seattle, it was a 2-year deal. Mm-hmm. So the base salary at the time, I was 29 and it was 106. Again, I talk openly about money. So people hear this, they're like, I can't believe you're sharing this. I talk about this in the good times and bad times. It was 165 base, 110 signing bonus. And then based on your performance, the base could be like up to 2 to 3 times, all based on performance. But they also relocated like everything, packed it all up. But if I left within 2 years, a big percentage of that I would have had given back. And of course, like right as I signed this deal, a month later, I got reached out to go on the show. So I was so nervous I would have to pay. So my whole idea was like, just make it till October. Now this all happened in April. Now, fortunately, we were able to work through some of those details. I didn't have to pay it back, but April, June, it was all gone. So I do want to give truth to the fact it was on my radar that I was starting to consider a new option. But I also will say, I don't know if the freedom or me losing my job at all connects to me being in what I refer to in the book as the love clouds. I don't think those are connected. I think I was just in a state of being in the love clouds. And I will say, like it was that time where I lost my job, it was really tough for a lot of things. I think my family just dealing with it, it was tough for them. You know, frankly, there was a lot of guilt, you know, residing guilt from my ex. You know, she felt terrible about it and had so much empathy around it. And of course, I was in this state of like, oh, man, this has been it for 9 years. What's next? So, yeah, it was just a interesting position. It was an interesting time, you know, but
yeah, well, sometimes like it's easier when they make the decision for you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they actually in the book, like I talk a little bit about it. They made the decision for me by saying like, we're expecting you to resign, but then they walked it all back. And what they said to me was, you can restart your career here and get rid of all social media and anything outside. No more interviews, no more TV, no more podcasts, nothing. Or you go restart your career outside of here. And so that was kind of the play on the restart roadmap was I chose to restart my career outside of the bank.
I read that. I liked the play on words. I liked the way that happened. And like, since you left your job, you've been able to kind of create your podcast, create your books, create your brand and your talent agency, which is something maybe you wouldn't have been able to do before if you stayed in banking. So it really all worked out. It was kind of a good thing that you got let go.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Hindsight, like I should have left. I should have left before that. Yeah. Sometimes those are the changes that you need. Like there's so many things you hold on to, I think, in this world for safety or fear of. But when you let them go, it kind of pushes you in another direction. And I think like a little business lesson, but like Steve Jobs, he talked about it in a talk once. And he was like, you know, people say passion, passion, passion. But the thing about passion is that when you truly have it with your job, you do things that like typically most people that are logical wouldn't do, right? He's like, there are so many times I should have stopped working at Apple. There's so many times I should have stopped it because I was truly passionate about it. I was doing things that were illogical. What I found about like with this whole industry and just like the space of like bringing some of these money topics to life and the career topic and the financial transparency, all this stuff, I just love it. I'm so gravitated towards it. And I do think, you know, when you are gravitated towards things and when you do have a true passion, you can do a lot of cool things with it. Like you. I mean, look at you, Zachary. I think you pump out more videos and more content than anyone I know. And no one has a clue how much damn work that takes. That takes so much work. But you're so passionate. I literally, Zachary, have said to myself, how physically and mentally can he watch those many shows, recap them at that speed, and get content out instantly?
Clearly, my arm really hurts. But yeah.
You're passionate.
I'm so passionate about it. But when you were talking about what you were just talking about, I was thinking about when I quit a job for the first time. I was working at Shared News and I was doing it like 3 times a week. It was entertainment hosting and I was there for 2 years and it was 25 an hour and it was like good income for me as I was just starting. And it was so hard for me to quit, to just like put it all onto my brand, Zachary Reality, like my pages, because I was scared about like not having that consistency, but all the energy that I was putting into Shared News was taking away from what I could have done on my TikTok and my channels and everything. So I was battling with it for about 6 months before I decided to finally quit. And it was just like the best decision ever. And it was so hard but I like finally did it and I felt so good about it and it paid off in the long run, obviously.
100%. And you did it against like, I think, you know, one thing is creators, influencers, you know, reality stars, whatever it might be. There's so many, like the pool is so wide and deep. And for some of the content that you first started stepping into, it was so wide and deep and there's so many people doing it. And I'm sure in your life, you had so many people say, Zachary, you know, there's other people doing this, stop. But like, look at what your consistency and hard work has done and the way you've differentiated yourself. And now it's like the people that like, when you stepped in, you had an eye on the people that you wanted to be like, and now people that step in, they look at you and say like, that's
crazy.
Like, that's pretty cool.
That's crazy. I will say I did one of my college projects on Lauren Zima. So I really like had a vision for so long that I wanted to cover Bachelor in Reality, but I didn't know what that was going to be until TikTok and like social media started.
Wow. That's so cool. Look at you.
Okay. Well, my book coming soon, 2030. So stay tuned. I'm going to ask you a quick rapid fire questions about your book. These are actually your questions, the top 10 talk money to me questions. So let's put you in the hot seat and see if you can answer. What is one thing you spend too much money on, but wouldn't be willing to give it up unless you were completely broke?
Hotels.
Why?
I don't know. I think something about like a nice hotel, I sleep better, I work better, I have more propensity of working out. And so like, I'm just like, I think I've turned into a hotel snob. I just am.
I love hotels. If you had to describe your relationship to finances using 3 words, what would they be?
Safety, respect, freedom.
Okay. What is your number one strength when it comes to managing your money?
My analytics, knowing the numbers.
Are you constantly like a graph guy, like writing things down, charting things?
Oh, I'm charting them. I'm looking at them. I'm understanding them. I'm meeting with the people. I have, big spreadsheet guy. I think the best part I've always learned, and I hate to go away from the rapid fire, is that, you know, people's stories shift and context changes and all these things happen in the world, but like just the numbers don't lie. So I always pay close attention to them or try to.
Love it. What is your biggest weakness when it comes to managing money?
I'm pretty risk averse. So I'm like, you know, I don't take on as much risk as I should. I think it's because it's taken me so long to get to the point of where I am. And I, my biggest fear is like that I'll have to go back to the banking world. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, I'm like too careful with my money management and investing.
Got it. If you won $1 million today after taxes and had to spend it all, let's say within 24 hours, what would you buy and why?
Wow, I gotta spend it in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna take 50% of it, and it's gonna go towards impact. And under impact, I would say non-for-profit, family, friends, things that like I just want to fill others and things that are important to me. The other $500,000, let's go have some fun with it. So I think I would call, and this would be connected to my friends too, but I would call every person that I know and love. Like I would call my foundation, my life's work. And I would be like, we are going to get a jet and this is where we're going and you don't have a choice. And I would like pop to each of the cities, pick them up. We would go on a little vacation. I'm huge on spending on experiences.
Yes.
Like material goods. And then I think I'd carve out a little bit of that to get a new car. It's time for a new car. So, but with that question, I think the cool thing is like, you're now hearing me think about my money. You're now hearing me think about what's important to me. And so asking someone that question allows you to see instantly on the spot how they prioritize money. And while that might not be a priority to you, or someone might be judging me based on what I'm doing, what matters is it's a priority to me and they have their own priorities and like knowing me in the middle.
Okay, well, you're a good person because I was about to buy a house. like I was about to just go on vacation. But also, you only have 24 hours to spend it. So if you're going to pick people up in every single city, that's going to take a lot of hours of the day.
If we get the jet, we could move pretty quick. Like if I stay East Coast, I could go down. I could like take the East Coast up and then we go one place. Mm-hmm. I think we could do six to 10 hours of picking up and flying.
And then rent a castle.
I don't know, have a great time.
Okay. A couple more. What is the most outrageous purchase you've ever spent?
One of the higher ticket amounts I bought was I bought a very expensive watch.
Okay.
So that was a little outrageous, but yeah, that was, I bought a watch. It was expensive. Mm-hmm. And the thought process behind the watch, so I actually knew I could sell it for more on the secondary market, which is why I bought it. And it's sitting in a safe right now. So I'm not even worried.
How much did you buy it for?
It was $37,500. Look at you, trading secrets question.
Oh, I listened to your podcast and you really get in there.
Yeah, but I could have sold it the day that I bought it. I could have sold it for $55,000.
Okay.
No, so that's a pretty big return. I think that market has softened up a lot. I think I could probably sell it now for like 40, 46 or something. But look at Jason buying something and making sure there's a return.
Shock. Of course. How much do you want to earn annually in let's say 10 years?
I want to be worth 50 million by 50. That's my goal. And that's a big thing I always talk about is net worth, right? So like earnings mean next to nothing because we know huge people with massive earnings, especially if you look at professional sports, their propensity and the percentage of going bankrupt 5 years after retiring is significant. It's material. Mm-hmm. It's all about managing what's actually your net worth. We all have a net worth. If I go spend money on a cup of coffee, my net worth instantly goes down. And if I get a big earning check, it instantly goes up. So it's the ultimate scorecard to manage like every area of our finances. So I think that's a big one, an important one. There's a full chapter on how to calculate your net worth, etc. Like these are things that are so important. Like were you ever taught K-12 how to calculate your net worth?
I was taught to save at a very young age. I come from a Jewish family and my grandpa used to give me quarters. I was always saving shit. Like I was always that kid. But one of the things my mom told me I was going to ask you is she was like, don't tell people how much money you make because then they'll expect you to pay for things. Well, that's the thing she always taught me.
Well, it's boundary. I think it all comes to boundary setting. I think if you talk about what you make, you have to create the boundaries to say, hey, just so you know, when we go out, this is my expectation, regardless of how much I make or what I do. Are you still a saver, Zachary?
Yes.
You are a big saver? You're not a big spender?
Of course I spend money, but I've lived in the same studio apartment for 4 years, so I'm able to save and spend.
Where do you spend, not to take the pressure off me here, but I'm just curious. My curiosity is driving. Where do you spend? Well, I'll ask you that question. Unless you're like, what is something you spend too much money on? And unless you go completely broke, otherwise you'll keep spending it on. What's your answer?
Just probably food. Food? Travel, food, travel, Ubers, hotels. Ooh. I don't spend any money on clothes. Obviously, I feel I'm fortunate. I get packages all the time. Like, I don't spend money on those types of material things. I've never been into that. Like, I spend money on experience, tickets, cool. hotels, and bills.
I love it.
And I'm actually generous sometimes with my friends. Okay, last question. If you had to define when enough money is enough, how would you define that today?
Enough money to me would be enough when I felt like I was in a position to live the current lifestyle I do and be able to retire with the amount that I've saved. That would be enough for me.
Okay.
Quick little tip. If you take your annual spend, multiply it times 25, it's a good barometer that that's the total amount of money you would need to live off for 30 years, which means if you retire at 65, you're in a good position to retire. Now, they say people that are in excellent health at 65 years old right now that don't smoke have a 71% chance of making it till 90, which is beautiful. Mm-hmm. But that also means we got to prepare more for the retirement. So if you spend 100 grand a year, you need 2.5 million if you want to continue that lifestyle to live off it for 30 years. Just a good benchmark.
I love that. I want to get into some gossip just because it's Zachary reality. Before I do that, where can everybody get the book and order it? When is it out?
Yeah, it would mean the world to me. It's out right now. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target. It's around $24. It's a working journal. And I'm telling you, I could say this with such confidence. Like, if you spend the $24 on this, you will instantly get a return, even if you read one chapter. And then I also recorded the Audible, which, you know, you sit in the studio for like 2-3 days. It's brutal. Every inflection re-recording. And that could be found on Audible or wherever you get your audiobook. So talk money to me.
Love it. I started it. I'm going to finish it. And I truly need the advice. So appreciate that. How was the tour that you just went on? You went to all these cities doing your podcast tour. Like, how did that go? How do you kind of put that together?
Oh my God. It was such a success. And it was a few weeks I'll never forget in my life. So we were in 8 cities. Mm-hmm. And it was all about the book tour, but we made it super engaging, exciting. Mm-hmm. We played different games, and it was extremely interactive, like a lot of people getting the mic and talking. Mm-hmm. And you know what was interesting, Zachary? The biggest thing, like, takeaway for me is the platform that I have is because of The Bachelor. And of course, that platform has been built over the years because of ties to Bachelor and everything else, right?
Yeah.
And I'm well aware of that and so appreciative of that. But it was really cool that the people that came, it was like literally 95% talk about careers and money and financial tips. And even at the end, we did an open 20 minute live Q&A. Now, the it was sponsored by Capital One Cafe. They were a dream to work with. They had a full production company. Mm-hmm. What they wanted to originally do was have people write the questions in and be able to screen them so they can avoid crazy questions, right? I said, no, let's just do an open mic. I can handle it. Mm-hmm. And 98%, no, that's exaggerating. Literally 92% of all the questions were money focused. Only 8% connected to like my personal life or bachelor. Mm-hmm. To me, like, I don't know, it was just really rewarding to be like, wow, you know, the message that we're trying to get across is being heard and it's making an impact and it meant a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, that's what you're doing right now. So I think a lot of people are actually interested in it and you're the only one like doing it the way you're doing it. So I love that. I'm definitely not going to ask you about anything that happened on Becca Kufrin's season, but I do want to ask you what you thought about. I do want to ask you what you thought about Joey's season, because I know you guys are friends. I loved him. Like, obsessed. How did you guys become friends and how did you find out he was going on the show?
So we met in Nashville. Before. I have a buddy here who's a dentist. He's friends with a dentist. His dentist was friends with him. We met in a foursome playing golf. And the minute I met him, I'm like, I love this guy. Like, mm-hmm. great energy. He was funny through and through, no matter what. Bad shot, good shot. Like, he was just a great guy. And I remember that day, I was having a really bad day, honestly. And I felt like the whole group and him specifically, I was like, they turned my entire day around. So that's how I met him. How I found out he was going on the show is after that, you know, I exchanged information with him. We kept in touch. And he had messaged me saying that there was a producer, someone from casting reached out. And he's like, is this legit? Do you know who this person is? And I was like, mm-hmm. honestly, I've never heard of that person. So I reached out to the people I did know. And I said, I was just like, is this person an actual producer? Is it real? Like, and they're like, oh yeah, they just got hired. And so that's how I knew he was going through the whole process. And I said to the person I know, who's like at the top, I was like, I don't know how you found him or where you found him or what your process was, but do not let go of that guy. Like, mm-hmm. he is special. You got a diamond in the rough. He is, and he's a great person. So that was a little bit about how I know him and what I found out.
The girlies, the gays were obsessed with him. Like, he's the best bachelor in years. Like,
oh, he's incredible.
I mean, no offense, but like Clayton and Zach, it's been a minute. Like, Joey is just so desirable and he just gave us such a good season. He didn't do anything wrong. What did you think of him as a lead? Did you expect him to be this beloved? Obviously. Like, what did you think of him as the bachelor?
Oh my God. I think he absolutely killed it. I think when, not even comparing it to other seasons, I think he's probably, you know, it's tough to make the statement, but probably the best bachelor we ever had. And
well, that's what I say, but it's just so hard because it's like, this is like the new version. You can't compare it to 10 years ago because it's such a different time. So he's the best new school bachelor of all time, but he's not the best OG.
Yeah, but I think so many people, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And I think there's so many people that you get, I imagine, obviously I've never done it, but I've talked to people who have, and I feel like you get caught up in the whole experience and then also trying to like make sure you're good and you're bringing on a good show. And I felt like through and through, irregardless of what happened, he was so true to himself, mm-hmm. even through hometowns, being like, he didn't ask, you know, asking for their hand in marriage and all the things that we've seen people do or say, I love you multiple times, or all the just the things that it's so easy to get, you know, suckered into that like emotion at that time. He just handled it like really beautifully. It was like a masterclass on being a good, authentic bachelor. And the ratings came through with it, which I love. I love that the ratings came through in that, because I oftentimes feel like some people expect it's got to be an outlying situation of pure mayhem to create ratings. And no, we just saw a beautiful story led by truly a beautiful man and said, no.
Yeah, when they say, like, you don't need the lead, it's about the women, like, it's actually about the lead. So I think that they need to do a really good job of picking the lead for the season, because it really does set the tone and gets people to tune in. So I was really glad as a Bachelor TikToker to have this season be good, because it was just great to, like, interact with people for the first time in a few years, because I feel like people were a little disconnected the last couple seasons.
Do you see, I'm just curious about this, do you see, like, all your numbers, the season does better, are all your numbers, engagement, following, do they all go up?
Like, significantly.
Wow. So in seasons that don't perform well, it also impacts your business.
And I, even when the show's over, I'm like, whoa, I got to talk about other things, because I can truly do it like all week when it's on, because that's what people follow me for. So it's like, it's what exactly. So when it's off, yeah, like, it's definitely like I miss it.
Interesting. That's wild. Cool.
So are you happy he picked Kelsey?
Yeah. Oh, I think she's great. Yeah. I'm very happy about that. They're lovely. They're beautiful. They're lovely. They're happy.
What did you think of Maria? I loved her so much on the show. She was one of my favorite contestants. What did you think of her personality?
Maria was incredible. I mean, absolutely, absolutely incredible. When the second I saw her on TV, I was just like, this girl is a star. She's just, I think she was hilarious. I didn't want to stop watching, like, what was going to come next from her. I think she would have made such an incredible bachelorette. So was a huge, huge fan of Maria.
And how do you feel about Jen being the next bachelorette?
You know, I thought she was good on the show. I thought she was great on the show. Like everyone, I was shocked by it. I thought it was a Daisy Maria combo. I'm so curious as to like what happens behind the scenes there. I've heard, and I've been a little removed from it all in the last few weeks.
Well, I can give you the tea.
Give me the tea. Did one of them said that they actually were offered the deal and they turned it down?
Daisy did, yeah.
Why did she say she turned it down?
She was not ready to be the bachelorette. She just went through her like hearing loss thing like right before the show. It was a lot on her, like emotionally, mentally, physically. And then going into the bachelor, she just had too much going on in her life that she just needed to decompress. And she wasn't going to be ready to get engaged in that short period of time.
God, I give her so much credit for staying so true to who, you know, who she is. And of course, the outlying circumstances with physical and mental health and other things that play a factor into that. But if you think strictly like the business side of it, it's a wild move to say no.
But she doesn't need it. Like, she's so popular from the show. Like, I think that she has a lot of opportunities, and I don't think she needed to do it. It would have been amazing. I would have loved to see her do that. But I would have actually preferred Maria, who I loved so much as well. But something ended up happening with her. We don't know what, but it was like
a few days before.
There's been a lot of people saying that it was her up until Friday, like 3 days before, and something just happened where it was maybe some type of mutual decision. We don't know the...
Do you have any tea on what happened or no?
I'm sharing the tea. I don't know what happened. I mean, I saw in Dumois, she had a mental breakdown. I don't have any like personal tea on, I just, from whatever I've seen online.
Yeah. I'll say this at the risk of most people interpreting the wrong way, but I'm just going to say it, especially because I own a talent management company. If the decision is strictly and only business, which it shouldn't be, it should be all the other factors that Daisy and everyone considers, 100%. Those are more important than business, 100%. But if it was only business, and I know you had said she'll be fine on her own, and she will crush it. But if you take the value of a lead versus a cast, the lead over the long run will always have a much, much larger value associated to their brand over a cast, over the masses. Now, we know certain people from a cast have gone off and done their own thing and built unbelievable value. But
yeah,
value of being the lead in the ABC franchise from a business perspective is astronomical. And if the only decision, the only factor was I could do better off on my own as opposed to being a lead right after the show, the large sample size would say that's an incorrect statement.
Yeah, but I mean, also she wasn't ready to get engaged so quickly.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That stuff outweighs everything. That's way more important.
I think, just
to your point about like the idea of which would serve the business side better. But yeah, if you have physical things going, mental going on, you're not there, you're not ready to be engaged, you have family things going on, of course that is much more of a priority to it. But I've heard a lot of people, I think even on TikTok and social media, say like they would be better off if they weren't the lead from a business perspective. That I disagree with if you look at the actual larger sample size of how long the show's been around.
That would make it seem more inauthentic. Like, we still have to want to see a love story. It's not all just about...
Of course. Yeah, if you're not ready to be engaged, you can't do it. Yeah, but I'm speaking to only the people that say you will be better off from a brand perspective if you don't do it versus do it.
Yes.
I don't agree with that. I think that's incorrect.
Got it. Well, yeah. Time will tell. They can always bring her back. I think she's really fabulous. So she would make a really good bachelorette. People still want you to be the bachelor. You were offered it once back in the day between you, Colton, and Blake. Were you ever reconsidered to do it again ever since?
No, I was never reconsidered.
Would you ever do it?
I don't know. I'm not going to have to worry about that.
Okay. That's a great way to kind of end things off. I am excited to see you on Tyler Cameron's new Prime Video show. Can you let us know what your appearance is going
to
be like that?
I think it's going to be a really cool show. And I think this is going to be exciting to see a whole different side of Tyler. It was so much fun filming it. And I think I'll only be on for, you know, maybe like a half episode or so, but we shot a couple scenes, possibly a business deal or two went down, and it's fun. It's a lot of fun. I'm excited for how it all turns out, for sure.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We wish you much success on your book and in your love life and in everything that is going on with Jason. So congratulations on all the success and the books. Where can everybody follow you, find you, order the book, listen to the podcast?
Yeah, thank you for having me. Continued success to you and everything you do. That is awesome. You're killing it. Book, Talk Money to Me, you can get on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Target. And then my handles for all my social media is just Jason_Tardik. And I am going to have to bring you to the hot seat of Trading Secrets if you're up for it.
I've been waiting for you to have me in the hot seat. You can ask me anything. I'll I'll go there.
I love it. We'll go there. And I appreciate you having me on. This has been fun.
Of course. And thank you all so much for listening and watching. And we will see you guys in the next one. Bye.